Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comments section of my Q&A videos or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. I am getting pretty excited because this next week I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. at the Reason Rally, and we've been talking about that a lot on my Sensibly Speaking podcast, so if you haven't checked that out, do so. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to this, and I think we're going to have a lot of reason and skepticism and critical thinking and all kinds of things going on. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And just so you guys know, if you don't watch my podcast partner and I are actually going to be doing live video tweeting and Facebook tweeting to the Sensibly Speaking podcast Facebook page and from the Sensibly Speaking Twitter feed there. So I will put right now on the screen here the Twitter and Facebook pages links for you. So if you want to like the Sensibly Speaking podcast page on Facebook and follow that and follow us on Twitter, you'll be able to keep up with our Reason Rally activities. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm really, really, really looking forward to that. And while I won't be here in town next weekend, I will pre-do a Q&A episode for you guys. So next Sunday, you'll have that ready to go. So we got some questions to take up here, so let's go ahead and get to it. Cassie W. David Miscavige has a reported financial worth of $50 million U.S., as reported by many agencies. I simply typed in David Miscavige net worth in the Google search bar to find this figure. How is this possible if he takes a minimal salary as head of the church? How has he amassed this fortune? I really can't fathom it. Do you think this is an accurate figure? Or is it a public figure and his real wealth is more, hidden away in other countries, etc., perhaps real estate, gold bullion, as one book theorized, or other assets? Does he earn or take a commission on donations to the International Association of Scientologists? Well, honestly, I cannot speak to the inner workings of David Miscavige's finances because I have no direct exposure to them. So what I'm going to tell you is pretty much my supposition based on the, you know, knowledge that I do have. The $50 million, I did look on the Google search bar also, and the $50 million figure comes from a couple articles that don't really offer much of substantiation as to where they got that $50 million figure from. And I kind of think that that's not really accurate, in the same way that I think that the old figure of millions of Scientologists that used to be bandied about on the internet is also not accurate, never was. It was just some figure that the church threw out, and I don't know where they got $50 million from. It doesn't look like they got it from a church source, because I don't think anybody in the Church of Scientology would ever say that David Miscavige is worth $50 million personally, because, of course, that opens, you know, up all kinds of cans of worms of where's he getting all that money from, and what's all this about, right? Now, does he have access to that much money? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that much and much, much more. Mike Rinder actually posted an article on his blog about this exact subject and talked about the fact that he didn't think it was accurate either, because David Miscavige doesn't need to have that much money personally in a bank account or something where he's got all that money sitting there, because every need that he has, every desire he has, is taken care of by the church through the church funds. And all of that is rolled through, you know, its various shell corporations and this, you know, this labyrinth of corporations that make up the Church of Scientology. It's easy to move money from here to there to here to there. That's not difficult for them. Not at all. And when you have, you know, $3 billion in real estate holdings and liquid assets, you know, you can say that money is going anywhere you want. And I'm sure the Church of Scientology does that, right? There's also, you don't also need to engage in a lot of financial shenanigans to have a lot of money go to the people who run nonprofit corporations and churches. Just look at any televangelist. These guys buy G6 airplanes with their funds. I mean, and look at Joel Osteen's palatial estate, you know, and these guys are running nonprofit religious corporations, right? Yeah, okay. just because it's nonprofit doesn't mean there isn't a lot of money flowing around and going to various individuals, and there's various ways of doing it. And as John Oliver broke down recently and amusingly on his show, it is very easy to get tax-exempt status under a religious exemption from the IRS here in the United States. So none of this stuff really requires lots and lots of brainiac work to make happen. I believe that knowing what I know about David Miscavige, that I'm sure he does have hidden bank accounts and set-asides and various cubbies and, you know, hideaway sort of things going on. But I also don't know that, but it wouldn't have to be that way, you know, because the Church of Scientology isn't going anywhere. Certainly as long as he's around, it's not going anywhere. And all of the wealth of the church is at his beck and call. David Miscavige could personally walk into any Church of Scientology anywhere in the world and go to the treasury person of the church there and say, I want you to write me a check right now for all the money that's in your bank accounts. And they'd do it. They would do it. And they wouldn't even ask. They might blink. They might think about it for a second and go, whoa. But they would do it. And that's the kind of power he has within the church structure. So, you know, with power like that, why would he need bank accounts with millions and millions of dollars in it? You know, although, like I said, I'm sure he probably does have that hidden away somewhere, or have it hidden away through investments and things like that, right? You can have trust funds and various shell groups and corporations and stuff like that where you can dump money and not be showing a profit, you know, or make it look like it's your own personal funds. This is done. So this happens, you know. So if it happens outside and we know about this with billionaires and things like that, then there's no question David Miscavige is doing it too. So that's my supposition on that. All of what I just said, totally just my opinion. So there you go. Graham, I wondered if you might address the ability of public Scientologists to restrict what they see or read at the behest of other Scientologists in the organization, and how their standards in real life aren't applied to their religion. This is true of many believers, where standards of evidence for taking medicines, buying stocks, or how safe a car is aren't applied to the most important spiritual questions like, is there a God? I can't understand how Scientologists can run successful businesses and interact with Joe Public and the world at large, yet still remain in a bubble. How can they not compare the success of their own business marketing campaigns to the sheer lack of outward advertising by Scientology? If I were a business owner, I'd be expecting enormous results from millions of dollars worth of fundraising to disseminate. I'd expect to see Scientology splashed across bus shelters and taxis and park benches in my daily life. They must know the costs of their own marketing, how many people they can reach with X number of leaflets, what the likely return is. Surely they must see Scientology as, at best, poorly performing in this regard. The sums are so huge that I can only think about my own charity fundraising, where just getting people to give a few pounds can be difficult enough. Yet millions of dollars are being put through these organizations each year to no benefit and no visible dissemination. If the same person who put their hand in their pocket to donate to Scientology was to pay the same amount of money to a marketing company to advertise their shop, they would be apoplectic if they didn't see more people in the door. Yet Scientologists see this every time they took a course. No more people, but they still need you to mortgage your house for more dissemination. Well, you know, it was frustration about just this exact thing that actually got me questioning quite a bit. And when I was still in the C organization, got me interested in why we weren't promoting more, doing more with the internet. And that, you know, and also wondering, you know, if we were, you know, why weren't we promoting more? Why weren't we more out there and that sort of thing? And it always came down to, we didn't have the money for it. See, Scientologists generally are not aware of the same amount of information that you and I are out here in the real world, because they're in that bubble world. Now, to address the first part of your question, getting back to that, the reason for that is because they choose to be. I mean, ignorance of that kind is a choice. And they make that choice because they're told to and because they want to believe the best of their church or their religious organization, right? And this is not just a phenomena that occurs in Scientology. I mean, you know, I don't know, look at Ben Carson, right? Here's a guy who ran for president, right, recently. Brilliant brain surgeon, you know, apparently, you know, separated conjoined twins. You know, like it takes skill and intelligence to be able to do something like that. And yet the guy has pictures in his house of him with Jesus and said that there's, you know, that he thought that the Egyptian pyramids were storehouses for grain, which is, you know, completely one of the most ignorant things you could possibly say about the pyramids in Egypt. So it is possible to be, you know, genius in one part of a person's life and complete moron in another part of their life. These two things they're not mutually exclusive. And when it comes to rational thought, especially when it comes to religion, rationality just flies out the window, you know, and anybody who has religious beliefs, I think if they're being honest, would have to acknowledge that those beliefs are not based on logically reasoned out, evidence-based thought processes, right? It wasn't critical thinking that landed most people into having faith. Faith is the opposite of that. It's belief without evidence. It's knowing without having any cause or basis for knowing, except maybe an emotional attachment or because it makes you feel good. And that's not evidence. That's not fact-based reasoning. So that's one reason why people believe in Scientology and grant it so much power in their life, is because they have that faith that it's doing a good thing. The leader of Scientology comes up on stage numerous times a year, shows them success stories, shows them politicians, cultural leaders, civic leaders talking favorably about Scientology. Whether those leaders in reality actually realize what they're doing or saying is a whole other thing. But perception here is everything. And what the Scientologists perceive, what they think they're seeing in these events, are, you know, packed course rooms, full ideal organizations that are brimming over with new people coming in. And then they look at their local church area that's not that way, and they think that it's just there. It's just in my place, in my city, that it's not doing well. And they look at the number of staff and they go, yeah, these staff, you know, they work hard, but, you know, there's not enough of them. And if we could just get Scientology going here, and that actually feeds into them giving more money, because then the sales guys and the fundraisers come around and they go, boy, it's not happening here. You guys got to make it happen. We got to get dissemination going. We got to get promotion going. So give us more money, because, you know, the church here doesn't have any money to do it. And they don't talk about the millions and billions of dollars that are in the coffers of the Church of Scientology. You know, when Debbie Cook put out her email a few years ago and said that the IAS had like $1 billion in its liquid asset, slush fund, Scientologists were not aware of that. They were like, "What? $1 billion?" Right? And you know, and it took a couple people were like a little apoplectic about that. You know, they were like, "What's $1 billion? How do we have that much money?" Because generally speaking, the way it's presented to the parishioners, Scientology never has enough money. Certainly as a staff member and a Sea Org member, I never had any evidence that the Church of Scientology had billions of dollars at its disposal, because we were broke all the time. You know, it's one of the big jokes of churches, of the Church of Scientology, is, you know, they can barely afford toilet paper. And so when I say, you know, I've said numerous times the money goes up, it doesn't come down. So they don't see that money, right? Now, as far as the dissemination and the promotion efforts, here's the thing. Enough, barely enough promotion is done to keep them satisfied that something's happening, and they get all excited about it. For example, the Super Bowl ads. Every year, chairman of the board makes sure that there are Scientology ads in the Super Bowl, right? And they do it through, pretty cheap advertising because they do it locally. They don't contract with the NFL and do it internationally. So it's only those advertisements only show in key locations where they've set up that advertising. Generally, where there is a Church of Scientology is where they do that. And they do that ostensibly to get new people to come into Scientology, but nobody's coming into Scientology from those ads. The local Scientologists see those ads and they just, they go orgasmic on it, right? They tweet, "Oh wow, did you see the ad?" And they talk about it in the church. "Did you see the Super Bowl ad? There's going to be a Super Bowl ad," And so when they see any kind of advertising or something like that, and there are efforts made by Scientology on Google and through billboards and various things in different locations to do spot promotion of Scientology, and they stay just enough of it to keep the Scientologists giving more money, right? It's kind of like a little balancing act that they play with that, because they want the Scientologists to keep giving money, but they don't want to spend money on advertising because, like I've said, that's not David Miscavige's game. He doesn't care about new Scientologists coming in droves and droves and droves, which is something L. Ron Hubbard did care about. David Miscavige, he could care less, right? As long as the whales, the big donors, are giving money and the rest of the fish are coughing up their dough, he's fine. He's set for life. If no more pennies were paid into Scientology, David Miscavige would be set for the rest of his life. So what does he care about new Scientologists, right? So that's the kind of the picture there. And, and as far as why Scientologists put up with it, it's because they have faith. Because they really do believe in David Miscavige. They really do think that he's doing the best that can possibly be done. And they have a vested interest in having that faith because they've invested so much time and so much money into Scientology. They don't want to see its errors and its bad spots and where it's falling down. And that's becoming harder and harder as the years go on here, which is why there's less and less people in Scientology, because a lot of people do see this stuff and they leave. So that's what's going on. Mandy Franks: "I just now watched in completion the interview of Stephen Fishman. Wow, what an incredible case that was. About how many Scientologists do you think have reached his level of brainwashing and excessive amount of study?" Okay, here's the thing. Stephen Fishman was a con man. He was not a Scientologist. He was a con man. And he used a lot of Scientology. He studied Scientology extensively, even wrote a book about it, where he talked about his experiences with Scientology and in Scientology and doing courses in Scientology and going up the OT levels in Scientology and all this nonsense. And I'm going to put a link in the comments, in the description section below, to an article that Tony Ortega posted recently explaining all about Stephen Fishman, because the guy is in jail right now on a 21-year sentence for, this is the second time he's in jail, for having pulled off, massive con financially against, for people. And that's what he first went to jail for 5 years for getting involved in that with Scientologists. And he just kind of, for some reason, thought it was a real good idea to pass himself off as some upper-level Scientologist. And so the things that he talks about with Scientology are not, as crazy as they are, and as crazy as Scientology is, they go together. But as Tony Ortega points out, it's almost a parody. Fishman takes it, and he takes the lingo, and he takes the levels, the OT levels, and the information about Scientology, and then he adds his own twist to it. And I haven't watched Stephen Fishman's interviews at any great length. I watched a few minutes of them, knowing already that the guy's a fake. And so I wasn't interested in hearing what he had to say about Scientology and stuff, because I don't need somebody to give me a fake version of Scientology. I know what it really is. So that's kind of the truth about Stephen Fishman. TB: "Regarding the Sea Org and the billion-year contract, has anybody ever claimed to have fulfilled the contract? having lived all the previous and future lives. Stephen Fishman, in his interview, and what a crazy interview that is, said that when the body dies, the Thetan can go back or forth in time, and because Stephen could not be guaranteed to be reborn in a well-off and good Scientology family, he refused to commit suicide when told to by the church. Does anybody remember future times, or is it mostly past? Did anyone remember being a Scientologist in the previous life, going through all OT levels and not needing any more OT training? If there is anyone like that, do they have special status in the church? Okay, well, here's a great example of what I'm talking about, which with Stephen Fishman, right, is where he's taking actual Scientology information and then putting his own twist on it. And he does that. There's two points here. One, no, there is no information in Scientology anywhere that you can move into the future and then move back into the past and then move into the future and then move back to the past. That is totally a Stephen Fishman invention. In 27 years of Scientology, I never, ever heard L. Ron Hubbard say anything like that. So that's just total pure fantasy invention of Stephen Fishman. And then this other point where he says that he could not be guaranteed a body and was going to, you know, therefore refuse to commit suicide. That was also fantasy. The church never asked him to do that. And there's no real evidence other than his word that he was co-opted and made to, you know, ruin his lawyer and then he was going to commit suicide or do what he called commit an end of cycle. Again, never heard of that expression before, an end of cycle. What you know, meaning suicide. That's supposed to mean suicide, according to Stephen Fishman. Just total fantasy, right? Now, though, to address your question, or questions here, regardless of Stephen Fishman's nonsense, yes, there are people who remember being a Scientologist in a past life. This comes up all the time in Scientology. In fact, it even came up with me. I actually thought that in the course of the auditing that I was receiving in Scientology, I thought I was having memories of past life time working in Scientology and even being on the ship with Hubbard, right? Which I recognize now was 1,000% fantasy on my part, and I don't even know where I came up with those ideas, but I did. A lot of people in Scientology claim to be past life clears, and now from, you know, those who were born from 1967 or so forward, they can claim to be past life OTs, and they do. And there's actually written procedures in Scientology for what to do if somebody claims to be a past life clear or a past life OT. Because Hubbard said that he was making clears all the way back in the late 1940s when he was first discovering Dianetics. And then all the way forward, you know, they were making clears here and there and everywhere. And so a person could theoretically claim to have, you know, or a person not could claim to have been audited in a past life. So yeah, that does happen. There's not particularly a lot of status with that. People don't talk about it. You know what I mean? You're not supposed to talk about that stuff. It's not supposed to be a big deal. Some people make it a big deal. They have, you know, obviously people in Scientology have a big status button on things, but it's not something you get medals or awards for, get recognized for, or something like that. And no one to my knowledge, has ever claimed that they were a past life full OT, like all the way through OT8. You know, I've never seen that. I've never heard of that. OT8 was only released in 1988, I think it was, when the free ones first set sail. So I suppose at this point somebody could have died and or been born from 1988, you know, since then and gotten into Scientology and claimed to be an OT8 from a past life. But they'd have some explaining to do if they were going to say that, because they'd have to detail what the materials are and what they covered and, you know, who they were and all that sort of thing, because you're supposed to supply the name of who you were so they can go and dig up the auditing folders of you in your last life and have it all to hand and all that, right? So anyway, it's all pretty silly. And that's the answer to that question. The sardine. Having watched several interviews of Scientologists and ex-Scientologists, I get the impression that many, if not most of them, have big egos. Even when saying they are out and no longer believe in it, many will boast about how far they made it on the OT levels, how awesome they were at it, how they had an above-average learning curve, etc. Not that there aren't plenty of exceptions, such as yourself, but I get the feeling that this is a common trend in Scientology. Do you think Scientology preys on egocentric people, using their ego to get them hooked? Or do you think they end up becoming egocentric due to prolonged exposure to the "we're the only ones who get it and will save the world" discourse? Or perhaps you think this simply due to a bias that people who are self-centered will tend to give interviews more often than those who are not? Actually, I think it's all of the above. I think that Scientology creates a narcissistic attitude, and I've actually written an article or two about this early on my blog. You can find those. And I think that, you know, because Scientology creates a personality shift of fairly drastic proportions, it molds a person into being more like L. Ron Hubbard. And L. Ron Hubbard was without question a narcissist, so amongst other things. So that your personality is molded into that through the process of doing Scientology. So that's a consequence of it. However, at the same time, I do believe that there are a small percentage of people who get involved in Scientology who are already narcissistic, maybe have some sociopath type tendencies, who want to have the power that Scientology promises to lord it over others. And so those types are also attracted to Scientology, and I've certainly seen those kind of people in Scientology. They're the kind who like to, you know, move up to executive levels in the church and beat on their juniors and things like that, right? Because David Miscavige is far from the only person who ever did something like that. So that's kind of my thought on that. Hey, it's time for Flash Answers. Mr. Bazzini, I have read that there are about 5,000 Sea Org members, but let us be really generous and say 6,000 SO. But you have 6,400 plus subscribers on your channel. Did you ever think when starting your channel that you could trump the Sea Org? Also, if I unsubscribe to your channel, do I get a goldenrod? Actually, when I first started my channel, no. I had no idea that I'd be talking to, you know, this many people. And I'm really pleased as punch about that. And I'm definitely happy that I've trumped the number of people in the Sea Org. So no goldenrods, no ethics orders for anybody who unsubscribes, though. I won't come after you. I won't fair game you. I won't have private investigators stalk and harass you. Igloran. Chris, for many years while in Scientology, you had very strong opinions and beliefs you felt sure about that were later changed after you got out. Do you ever question other opinions you may have on different subjects, thinking you could possibly be wrong about them also? Do you question yourself and ever think you might have gotten other things wrong you believe in? Yeah, all the time. Absolutely. That's why I say, you know, that I don't know are the three most powerful words, you know, in critical thinking, and the most important is because we have to acknowledge what we don't know. And I've had to reassess and reevaluate all kinds of things that I thought I knew things about that now I look at and I go, yeah, no, I don't really know that much about it. Or I've had wrong ideas about things. Sure, tons of things. And I take a lot of, I do a lot of work to try to, you know, stay on top of myself that way and learn new things and relearn old things when I learned them wrong in the first place. So I think that's part of being a critical thinker, and I'd have a hard time calling myself a critical thinker if I didn't act that way. Jonathan Mark. Thanks for telling us what you know about exteriorization. I was wondering whether during your Scientology years, you believed that you yourself had experienced it. If so, was it the kind where you see yourself from another part of the room? Was it like a lucid dream, a kind of dream where you know that you are dreaming? I think I actually talked about this when I talked about exteriorizing earlier, but I'll say, you know, again, I got a really big feeling when I felt, I did, the answer is yes, I did feel like I had exteriorized, but I never saw myself from a corner of the room or from outside myself. I never had visual perceptions outside of my body. I just felt bigger than my body, if that makes sense. I sort of felt the hair raise on my arms and I sort of, ooh, you know, and things became very, very, very clear. Like my perception, hearing and sight and whatnot became very, very acute. Like I was very, whoa, aware of everything going on around me. And I thought that was part of the exteriorization, was that heightened awareness of things. It just, that's how it made sense to me at the time. I mean, you don't ask me now why I thought that particularly. I just did. I thought I was kind of bigger than my body and maybe perceiving things with my, you know, theta tentacles or something. I don't know. But that's kind of how I thought about it. So there you go. Okay. And so we've come to the end of another episode for this week. So thank you very much for coming around. If you have any questions, comments, feedback of any kind, constructive criticism, put it in the comment section below. I'm happy to see it and hear it and respond to you. And again, Reason Rally 2016, you know, check us out on Twitter and Facebook and on our podcast, the Sensibly Speaking podcast, and see what that's all about this coming week, because I think it's going to be pretty exciting stuff. So thanks again, and I'll see you guys next week.